Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Was there a plan within DHS about potential reunification?
Ma'am, I was never party to any of those discussions, nor have I seen any documents relating to that.
And you, Mr. Gaudin, have you ever seen any documents such as that?
ICE always has had a plan for reunification at removal. The difference here was the quantity.
I just kind of don't buy the numbers thing, because you guys can pull up the numbers with four or five clicks, so you knew the numbers. So if there wasn't a plan in place for the kind of numbers you encountered, that lies squarely within the responsibility of the administration not adequately planning for it.
It's been more than a month since the federal government was supposed to reunify parents with their children taken from them at the U.S.-Mexico border under what the Trump administration called its zero-tolerance policy.
Well, we're on track to do it. We're working hand-in-glove with HHS, and it's certainly our intention to reunify all families that are suitable.
Today, hundreds of kids still remain in the custody of the U.S. government in shelters and foster homes across the country. I'm Cindy Rodriguez, filling in for Tanzina Vega, and we begin with that story on The Takeaway. Lee Gelernt is the deputy director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project and the lead attorney in the lawsuit against the federal government. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So give us an update on the children still separated from their parents. How many of them remain and why haven't they been reunited?
Right. There are, by our latest official count, 528 kids who are still separated. Children are still separated, ranging from 1 year old to 17. 343, by last count, have parents who were deported without them. So those parents are sitting in Central America without their children. We are working to try and contact these parents, explain their options, but it's a tough task. I don't want to sugarcoat it. It's a difficult task to reach all of them, to find them, and then to explain their options.
So tell me, who's looking for these parents?
Right. So we decided the ACLU could not by itself locate all these parents without significant help. So we created what we're calling a steering committee. And the central steering committee includes a worldwide law firm, two NGOs here in the United States that primarily work here in the United States, and an NGO that's based here but has significant resources on the ground in Central America, human rights, what they call human rights defenders. We have phone numbers for most of the parents. We are calling them. We have about 50 to 60 people who are making those phone calls. We haven't reached everyone so far. So I suspect we're going to have to be on the ground in Central America looking for these parents.
So let's take a step back. So these children are under the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
That's right.
And it's my understanding that these children came with some sort of information, many times a phone number, for some contact in their home country. Did the federal government have those phone numbers for a long time? And when were you able to get those phone numbers?
Right. I think you're putting your finger on an important point. You know, we believe that the federal government has had the phone numbers for these deported parents for some time. But those phone numbers were only turned over in August, and that was at the compulsion of the court. Throughout the litigation, the government has tried to wash their hands of the parents who were deported, even though their kids are in U.S. custody here. At one point, they actually took the position that the deported parents weren't even part of the lawsuit. The judge put his foot down on that and said, these deported parents are not only part of the lawsuit, but they may be the ones who are suffering the most because they're in a foreign country worrying about their child here in the United States. The government then said, well, let the ACLU find the parents. We're basically washing our hands of responsibility to find these parents. The judge again put his foot down and said, no, you created this mess. It's ultimately on your responsibility, but the ACLU has agreed to help, and we've, of course, said we will do anything we can, but we need the information. So we're now in a situation where we're just beginning the process of trying to find these parents. We could have been starting that process in the beginning of July and hopefully have concluded it by now. You know, it may not seem like a long time, 30 days, 40 days, but we're talking about toddlers, babies, young children without their parents. We believe there was no excuse for not turning over the phone numbers on a rolling basis.
So do you have regular contact with these NGOs? Are you getting regular reports back from them?
We are. We are in daily contact with the NGOs, everybody they find. We feed them information, what we find through phone calls. So we are working every day to find these families. And one of the difficult obstacles is that a lot of the parents don't speak English or Spanish. They speak indigenous languages. So if we do reach them, we need to have an interpreter on hand to speak one of these languages. They're often in remote villages, sometimes in areas that are dangerous. So we have trained human rights investigators going out to see them, but it's not an easy task.
So when these parents are found, how have they been reacting? Did they believe that they had lost their kids forever?
I think the feeling is pretty mixed. Some of them have been speaking to their children and had a better sense of what's going on. I think some were extremely confused. They are all to figure out what they can do. And so we're trying to advise them of their options. So it's not just contacting them, but then it's the difficult task of explaining to them what their options are. We believe there should be three options. The government has taken the position that there should only be two options. And so just to be clear about this, the government's saying the child can be sent to Central America and reunified with the parent if that's what the family wants. And we obviously ask them right away, and a lot of families are saying, send my child immediately. Some parents are making the decision that it's just heartbreaking to say, leave my child in the U.S. with a relative and let them seek asylum. I'll stay here. And the third option, which the government refuses to acknowledge when we may have to go to court, is that the parent should have the right to come here and seek asylum with their child. We believe there's a significant number of those now that we're reaching the parents, that those parents should have the right to come back and have a meaningful asylum hearing with their child. But it makes it very difficult to advise the parents when we don't know if that option is realistically going to be an option. It's going to depend on what the court says. So right now we have to ask them whether that's something they might be interested in, but we have to be very careful not to suggest to them that coming to the United States is definitely an option at this point.
I'm talking with Lee Gallant of the ACLU about the ongoing process of reunifying children who were taken from their parents by the government at the U.S. border. And I should say also that we asked the Justice Department for comment, and they declined to because of the pending litigation. We also reached out to the Department of Health and Human Services. They're the agency that's responsible for housing these children. And they sent us this response, quote, reunification is always the ultimate goal of those entrusted with the care of unaccompanied alien children. And we are working toward that for those unaccompanied alien children currently in our custody. Lee, what do you make of that?
I think the problem with HHS's comment is that they're calling these children unaccompanied. They're not truly unaccompanied. They were rendered unaccompanied by the United States government. They came with their parents. So it's very different than a child who just comes by themselves. HHS saying these are unaccompanied children is simply wrong and distorts the issue. They're also claiming that the children are getting proper care in their facilities. That again misses the issue. The real harm to these children comes from being separated from their parents. As the medical community has said over and over, since this policy was implemented, these children are in danger of suffering irreparable harm from being separated from their parents.
So, Lee, there's also, so these are the deported parents, but there's also a category of parents and kids who haven't been reunited. There's about 50 cases where the government says it's identified red flags during the background check process, like old criminal cases. Can you tell us a little bit more about those red flags?
Yeah. We have always said from the beginning of the litigation that if a parent genuinely is not fit to care for their child, they, of course, would be carved out of the lawsuit. That's just basic child welfare practice. If a parent, for example, had 6 convictions for child abuse, you don't want them reunited with their child. But what we've also said, and the judge agreed, is that they have to have a criminal history that's sufficiently serious that it bears on their fitness to be a parent, right? We don't take away children from parents for every crime that we would have, you know. So what we have now found out from the government is that they have roughly between 40 and 50 children they haven't reunited because they say it's a serious criminal history. But when we finally got that information, it's clear that that is not serious criminal history that would warrant taking someone's child away. We have old fraud convictions, DUI, illegal entry, possession of drugs.
Are these convictions in their homeland or convictions here in the U.S.?
They're both, but I want to emphasize they're not even only – they're not – the list doesn't include just convictions. Sometimes there's just allegations or warrants. So we have said to the government this week – we don't believe for a few of them, we want more information to make an assessment. But for most of them, we feel like we have enough information that the child should be reunited. We have told the government that if the government cannot negotiate with us and actually reunite these children, I think we will be back in court on that issue because the judge has made very clear that he wants standard child welfare practices applied. We don't take a child away in this country for a fraud. It has to be something that really bears on your fitness and puts the child in danger. Things could change. We're hopeful the government will relent. But at this point, it looks like we're going to have to go to court to fight for these children as well.
Lee Gelernt is the deputy director of the ACLU's Immigrants' Rights Project. Lee, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.